The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Going on, WrestleCast fan. This is your boy Sean.
Yo, this is a nice one, DJ Nice One in here checking in.
It's your boy Dwayne, the Libra Icon. What's going on?
And I guess I have to fill the last but not least role. It's your boy Oigo Las Voces in here trying to make sure that I don't catch this dang on disease that everybody in my state seems to be getting.
I know that's right.
That's real. And yo, Hill Heat is back, but it's not quite Hill Heat. Doing something brand new for the WrestleCast fan, taking Hill Heat, gonna push it to the side. Still gonna honor the past in some ways, but we're gonna brand new hit you with the push, that goddamn push. Thanks, JR, for the name. What we're gonna do with the push is give you some commentary on shows that are happening presently. We're gonna hit on news and notes each week, and then in a kind of honor to the Hill Heat podcast, we'll also kind of turn it back and talk about some things that happened in wrestling past the week of. So we're not Hill Heat anymore, but we're still going to give you some of those throwback moments. All right. So to it, guys, let's go on to our first topic. Let's talk about that shit show known as Extreme Rules. But before we dig, just a quick recap of what happened. Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura won the tag team titles, the SmackDown tag team titles, from the New Day in a tables match. Bayley defeated Nikki Cross to retain the SmackDown women's title. Seth Rollins, he took Rey Mysterio's eye out. All right. Asuka and Sasha Banks officially went to a no contest, but Sasha Banks has taken control of the Raw women's title, claiming it as her own. Drew McIntyre defeated Dolph Ziggler in the WWE Championship match that was considered an Extreme Rules match, but yeah, we'll talk about that. And I guess Bray Wyatt defeated Braun Strowman in a non-title swamp match, or whatever the hell that was. So, fellas,
whatever that was.
Cinematic theater.
Shit show. Thoughts.
Exactly. Man, some of the matches were actually really good, but they just had horrible endings. It was like the pay-per-view of bad endings. Like, you know, the tag match was pretty good from beginning to end. I give that. The finish was good. Cesaro putting Kofi through the table. That was a dope little spot. But then, like, the women's SmackDown was kind of a bad ending. The Raw one was a bad ending. The fake Mr. Potato Eye that they had, Rey Mysterio had, was terrible. it was the pay-per-view with bad endings. Good matches with terrible endings.
So I completely missed the part where they showed the actual fake eye that was just like rolling on the floor. It was terrible.
It was horrible. I mean, when you first watch it, you watch Seth Rollins doing his best draws impersonation. He's going to puke, but...
And see, I missed the whole puke stuff. Like, during that match, like, I'll be honest with you. During that match, because I knew it was going to be some bullshit, like, I wasn't even paying attention. I was just waiting for Michael Cole to say something stupid for me to know it was over.
Yeah, when he was holding his eye that long, I knew that's what it was. I was like, all right, they're building the eye pop out. And soon as Seth Rollins turned away looking like he saw the most disgusting thing ever, I was like, yep, and here it comes.
Yeah, for me, I didn't even watch much of it. I'll be honest with you, because I knew it was going to be terrible. But in all honesty, it was the horror show was the horrible endings. That's probably where the horror came into play, because everything about it was just horrific. So I just think that we got through it somehow, some way. I don't want to see – I know we got to get back to the arenas, but, of course, because people don't know how to be responsible, we probably ain't going to see that anytime soon, because all of this stuff is just getting stale and it's just not great.
All I got to say about the match itself, the winner puked. That should pretty much say everything that needs to be said about that match. The winner puked at the end. Sounds like a metaphor to me.
Yep.
So let's turn the attention to the actual main event. So you got old school Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman returning home to the sport. Yeah. Was that even a match?
It was just like the match he had with Cena at WrestleMania. It's just cinematic. It's just cinematic mind games. That's all it was. I think in the cinematic visual aspect, it was great. But in the aspect of actual wrestling, it was not great. But the cinematic part of it was what got me through it, because I'm just like, hey, the mind games, this is what Bray Wyatt does. Like, visual effects, the Alexa Bliss, like, Braun's time travel through his journey from the swamp starting out to him getting over with the crowd, him being in the mixed match challenge and all of that, and then the Fiend returning. All of that was, like, visually great, but in the aspect of wrestling for the title match, I'm trying to see a title match, David, especially for the main event. So, there's no title match. There's no title changing hands. It was really pointless, especially put it as the main event. So, like, the rundown, the scheduling of it was just bad. That was just not great.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it perfectly on the head right there. I mean, it just left you confused at the end. Like I said, it was a pay-per-view of bad finishes. And even that BS, it was just like, who won? You know, like, one guy goes into the swamp, who's supposed to be the winner, but then all of a sudden he pulls the other guy back in, so now they're both in, and then supposedly a different character comes out at the end. So, like, is the Fiend the winner? Like, who wasn't even supposed to be in the match? Like, you just don't know what happened there.
Yeah, see, I didn't even know going in, like, it's a swamp match, but how do you win? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And when Braun went into the pond, I was like, okay, is it over? And next thing you know, like, that was really, what was that movie? Was that Jason Goes to Hell? That was Jason Goes to Hell, right? Was that Jason Goes to Hell when Freddie pulled?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So,
I don't even watch that. I know that one.
Right. So, and that just popped up in my head. So they bit off Jason and Freddy Krueger, man. Come on. Benny, I saw you was about to say something. What's up, bro?
I mean, here's the thing with it. And, I mean, I'm kind of going into another match here, so I apologize in advance. But you have this guy in Drew McIntyre, who you are trying to push as the face of the company, as being the star. And frankly, he needs all the help he can get, not only because of the pandemic, but because of his own other shortcomings. Every opportunity that you have to put this man in the main event and to send the fans home with him being the last thing that they see, you need to take advantage of. And they did not do that because they wanted to have this last. And it's just like, why? I mean, I get you want to end with the cinematics and all that, and that's great. But, I mean, we know who Bray is. We know who the Fiend is. We know who Braun Strowman is, for that matter. But if you're going to have that match last, and not, and like y'all said, not even be a title match, like, what are y'all doing? I think my biggest issue with the match was actually the placement. And that's kind of strange for me to say, considering how I feel about WWE currently.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Absolutely. I think in regards to the Drew McIntyre situation, the pandemic really derailed his momentum, because he was really getting everything together. Like, everything was coming together for him. Like, the turn was happening. The push was getting ready to happen. He wins the Royal Rumble. Then everything, you know, around the world goes to shit. And then that kind of, and then because, you know, everybody around the WWE locker room is catching COVID because Florida, sorry, Benny, but the fact of the matter is, I think with Drew, like, is really, and I agree, like, the placement, is just the placement of it was really the big thing for me as well. That could have been, like, in the middle of the match, or that could have been, like, the match before the main event. Like, put the titles, like, in the champions in the main event, like they should be. Especially the flagship championship.
Hell, do we even know what the flagship championship is? That's the problem. And that, I'm not trying to say anything against what you just said, Dwayne, because that's a good point. The way that they treated the titles, like, the viewer can't know which belt is important. Because you literally had the Universal Champion lose in a non-title match in the main event.
Right. That's what I think has always kind of just been, like, we all know, like, at the end of the day, what's supposed to be, and I emphasize the word supposed to be the WWE Championship. Like, that's supposed to be, like, the end-all, be-all, holy grail, everything. But, yeah, it is kind of true with the fact that, I mean, if the Universal Champion is losing in a non-title match in a swamp, is it really that valuable of a title? Like, maybe the Intercontinental title is a little bit above the Universal title. Maybe even the United States title, maybe. So, like, it's probably like WWE, Intercontinental, US, Universal.
Hell, I might throw 205 live. Bill,
man,
I call it 205.
The NXT Cruiserweight.
So, last thoughts before we move on, guys. Just the Extreme Rules concept, period. Is it worn out? Do they need to continue to do Extreme Rules pay-per-view?
No, they do not, unless they're actually going to be extreme, like the roots of it, ECW. If it's going to be extreme, make that shit extreme, like... There's no point. It's basically, they might as well just rename the pay-per-view No Disqualification. That's a better name for
it. Yeah, I mean, if they're not going to go all out old school-wise, then there's really no need. Because, I mean, we all know what extreme is. Like, you know, for one, they don't like people to bleed no more. I get it. So that, in a sense, anything that involves that you would really have to bleed to get a match gimmick over, then just don't do it anymore. And usually when you say extreme, you're going to see blood. You're going to see all that. And so when you got, like, everybody's, like, no bruises, no nothing, like, what's the point?
But a guy lost an eye. That's extreme.
Oh, man. Yeah, I guess you can say that.
But, no, they need to just go ahead and get rid of this, you know, fully embrace the PG-ness, the fact that they want to be the, I was about to say wrestling, sports entertainment version of Disney, and just let it go from there. You know what? Just take back the Great American Bash name from NXT. and have that be your July pay-per-view. And then just let NXT still be TakeOver or whatever. Just do that.
Or Fully Loaded.
Yes!
Break that.
Fully Loaded 98 is one of the best pay-per-views that they have ever done.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on.
Shoot, that wasn't bad either, because that was the end of an era match.
and Fully Loaded was in July.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump to Monday Night Raw. In my opinion, the highlight of Monday Night Raw should be Drew McIntyre. But it's not. I feel like the highlight each week of Monday Night Raw is Mr. Montavious Ford. Like, MVP is saving that show. I wouldn't watch, if it wasn't for MVP or R-Truth, I wouldn't be watching. So, guys,
never thought I'd be in the era where we say R-Truth.
MVP and his current performance on Raw.
I'm going to go up for the dude from 305. So, you know, there's that. But no, he's really, really added something to the show. And I'm going to be honest, I did not see this coming from a mile away. Like, whoever would have thought, you know, the MVP coming back would really would just be this good. Like, you could have told me that JTG or somebody would have been doing this, and I'd have believed it before her, you know, MVP coming back. But hey, you know, he's doing his thing. But one thing I do have to say, highlight of Raw, Charlie Caruso.
Oh,
always. Always.
You know, that's what I was saying. You know what I mean? You know, I was trying to put some shine on the wrestlers. You know,
I mean,
we all know this,
right? But I agree as I think about it as well. And I really didn't, like, I'll be honest, I really didn't watch too much of this episode of Raw or any of the last Raws in the last few weeks, because A, work, and B, I just haven't been impressed. But the segments that I've been impressed with have been MVP segments. I mean, it saves me from listening to Bobby Lashley. But I will even say this, though, to the credit, it seems like there is a little bit of charisma rubbing off onto Lashley. Like, we know Lashley has the charisma of a doorknob, but some of that charisma is actually coming off. It's rubbing off. And I love the fact that first off, the United States title is ugly. Let's just say that right then and there.
Talking about the Balls Championship?
Yes, the ball. Yes, the eagle is a sack of balls. That's exactly what it is. And I would say that I didn't like the flag. I mean, if we went back to the old WCW United States title that was there before, then that would be all for it. But this shitty ass design is terrible. But I'm really glad that MVP is back. I thought he was going to be done. Like, after the Royal Rumble, I think a lot of us did. I think the fact that he is literally carrying the brand and making it watchable is great. I think another good reason why I watch is Asuka, because Asuka and Kairi Sane, Asuka's a treasure. So, like, I'm definitely glad to see, like, this feud between the role models and the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka, Sasha, things of that sort. So I really think those two are really, and as much of the supporter, like, I do like Drew McIntyre, but, you know, like, the focus isn't really on him, which is, again, where's the value of this championship going?
With me, to go back with MVP, one thing, yes, I'm glad he is helping out Lashley, but I'm really glad now that they introduce Shelton Benjamin with the group, because I'm glad to see him back on TV, because he's too talented to not be on TV. Now, that's another ugly belt with the 24/7 belt, but at least he's on TV. So I'm glad about that on with MVP being back. And I say my MVP is probably Sasha and Bayley, because them two been showing out on like every show, every week, like the past like month, doing something entertaining. So them probably my MVPs right there.
And I agree with that, but if it wasn't for Charlotte Flair doing all those shows all week long, there wouldn't be no Bayley and Sasha Banks doing those shows all week long.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I can definitely hit on this with the Shelton Benjamin. I'm hoping that they take that ugly-ass green belt now that it's on Shelton and get rid of it. You know, take that.
Yeah, just add something different. Something.
I mean, keep it on him, but give him a new belt, man. Make that the damn USA championship. Well, no, they got the United States champion. Just call it the television title. You know, do something different with it, man.
TV title, European title, something.
Ain't all nothing wrong with having Shelton Benjamin wrestle each week on Raw.
At all. And also, all it is the greatest Royal Rumble belt that Braun Strowman won. With a 24/7 plate on it.
Are we allowed to remember that belt? Does it just appear in one show and then
they just changed the faceplate. It's the same green strap, just a faceplate. And I would say that I would agree with the fact that change it to a TV title, like that would be a great thing to have. Like it's never been done in WWE. So why not have it? Like, it would be something fresh. You have, you know, and it give people who are, you know, low to mid-card or even on the rise, give them a shot. It's another belt to give somebody an opportunity.
Especially right now, when you have both shows being taped at the same place, you can have this belt be on both shows quite easily. You know, you don't have – it's not like, oh, you know – one show is touring the East Coast and one show is touring the West Coast. I mean, you can really get some mileage out of this and, you know, maybe sustain a few viewers. Be like, oh, well, what's going to happen with this thing next? So, yeah, it should be something that is a great idea. It should be something that they do to just give people a reason to watch, because looking at them ratings, they ain't got too many of those.
Nope. And that's the one thing that I can say, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. And let's be real. We've seen, since this pandemic hit, a few examples of WWE copying AEW. So you allow them to beat you to – WWE had damn near 20 years to introduce a television title. And you let AEW sneak up on you. Well, they ain't sneak. They just outright hit it. And every single week – a Cody Rhodes match is expected, and it's compelling, it's good TV. And for a three-hour show, you know, I hear Bruce Pritchard's show and all these other people talk about how hard and difficult it is to book a three-hour show. Well, hell, you got 15 to 20 minutes you can just chop off every week if you had a television title.
20-minute time limit. Go back to that. Also, I'm in the minority in this one. I haven't watched much of AEW for different reasons. Also, like, I'll pose a question. I guess we're gonna have an AEW segment later, but I'll touch on that. But yeah, it is funny how they didn't see them as a threat, but now it's like they're doing all these things. It's like, if they weren't such a threat, why are you biting off their ideas?
Well, they acknowledged that they were a threat the minute they started signing folks to big money contracts. Let's keep them away from AEW. So they already played their hand. Before we move on to Wednesday night, let me just throw this one last Raw topic out there. So, guys, how did you feel about Randy Orton versus The Big Show main eventing Raw in 2020?
The same way I felt about Randy Orton main eventing against Christian in 2020. What was the point? What year are we in? Are we in 2002 again? Like, what the fuck? Like, did they get the last two numbers backwards? Like, it's the same thing. Like, they're old. They're both old. Like, there's no point. Okay, I'm done.
Well, the thing with, like, Orton is, like, it would have been a good main event if you put Orton against somebody else. But why they keep wasting them with, like, Christian, who obviously we knew that was just a plant for something to get something to happen. That was an angle. But, like, Big Show, like, come on, man. Y'all can find somebody better. Y'all keep pulling out the same old dudes, pulling out the same matches. And Orton's actually a guy that still actually wrestles on the regular, so he can still work a match. But nobody tuning in to see Randy Orton versus Big Show.
And not only did he work the match, he can also – he still – it's like Randy Orton, ever since he acknowledged his wrongs with the whole Black Lives Matter, it's like he's rejuvenated again. So
yeah, he's a whole new guy.
Yeah, the ancestors really was like, okay, we're going to lift this curse on you, so – we're going to make you great again. No pun intended, but yeah, anyway, it's like Orton's turned the clock back.
Well, the thing with Orton, well, yeah, I somewhat wonder, okay, like, is this a reward for him for actually being responsible somewhat for, you know, one of the few times in his career? At least with Christian, you know, it was somewhat of a callback to their angle in 2011. Somewhat. The other thing is, just like how we were talking about Drew McIntyre not being in the main event and how in like that placement thing, this one WWE got right. They put their sexiest wrestler, at least according to Rusev in a poll that they apparently did some time back, they put their sexiest wrestler in the main event. Because Rusev said that Orton was the sexiest wrestler on the roster. So maybe that's where they were going, you know, trying to win that 18 to 49 female demographic.
A new demographic.
You know, they want him to be the demo, their version of the demo god, like Jericho apparently is in AEW.
That's a perfect segue to Wednesday night. I feel like after watching both of the shows, AEW is the more notable show from this past week. So I only have one thing about NXT that I wanted to throw out there and ask you guys, what is up with Karrion Kross? Like, wow.
Overrated.
Like, what are your thoughts about Kross? Because I got mine.
He's got a great entrance, and that's about it.
Overrated, overhyped, and not that impressive. And this is for somebody who has watched NXT, like, once in a blue moon. Like, I watch Keith Lee matches. I run back Keith Lee matches, Adam Cole matches, and that's about it. Karrion Kross, I watched one match with Ciampa and I was not impressed. Ciampa carried that match, and whoever he faces is carrying the match. He's not carrying anything. So I feel like he's getting all these vignettes and promos for, and he's pissing it away because he sucks.
So you're saying Karrion's not carrying anything?
Basically.
Exactly.
So I kind of agree. I do think his pre-WWE stuff was better than what he's been doing now. So I don't know if there's maybe a style adjustment or something like that going on. But I have to admit, I do listen to the Tennis Rackets podcast. And the Tennis Rackets said that it won't be long before he is forgotten and Scarlett Bordeaux becomes the star of that production.
Agree.
And Gotta say, I agree. I mean, yeah, you look at her, and if he's not all that impressed with the ring, which he isn't, yeah, I could see that happening sooner rather than later.
Oh, it's gonna happen real quick. The fact that they put him out there with Tommaso Ciampa and basically had Ciampa get squashed by Dean, which makes Ciampa look bad. Ciampa look bad because he comes back this past Wednesday and has a lengthy match with Dominik Dijakovic. But you just drop Tommaso Ciampa. That makes zero sense. You know what I mean?
Right.
And going back to what Benny said about the presentation, that presentation is all. It's all. She's the first person you see on the entrance. She's the most you see. And even when he's not out there during a promo or doing somebody else's promo, if the interruption is made, it's by her. You know what I mean? So, look, I trust Triple H. I trust Shawn Michaels. They gotta know that they have a Mark Merrill and Sable situation going on. And I guess trying to give Cross some space to perform, to kind of make his due, but it's not working. Like,
it's not
is far and beyond the star of it. And if Karrion doesn't start to have quality matches soon, ain't nobody. Oh man, I hate it for him. That first live crowd match, it's gonna be over for him.
He's gonna get marrowed, and basically, yeah, like the Mark Merrill Sable comparison is very apparent. Or it's funny because you said Triple H and Shawn Michaels. And I kind of went to the Rockers, like kind of maybe throw them through a glass window or something. So I was kind of just thinking, hey, maybe that is the route that they're going, because I don't see it for them.
If Scarlett Bordeaux super kicks Karrion Kross through a plate glass window, that might be the greatest thing ever.
I love it. That's a great idea. Somebody mail that idea down to the Performance Center and give it to Triple H. Like, let's make that happen. She can do it. I believe in her. I've seen her split her legs before. So I'm pretty sure she can get her legs up there. I think. I hope.
Shout out to the Freak Test.
All right, switching gears. Let's go to AEW. So
I'm out on this one.
So AEW this past Wednesday night, TNT title match, Cody versus Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston in AEW. What say you guys?
Well, I guess I'll start this off. Since I've been watching NWA Power since the beginning, so I actually know a little bit about Eddie Kingston. When I tell you, I seriously marked out when I saw him come through that curtain. I was like, oh snap. And the thing that Eddie Kingston brings, and he showed a little bit of it on Wednesday, but it's a lot more evident, like when you watch Power, and if you watch, you know, like the stuff that he's done on Carnyland with NWA. But that man really, really believes in everything he says. Like, I know we use the term a lot, but he is real. Like, that's who he is. He really lives and dies for this business, and he believes in his character it is so utterly refreshing to see someone like that. And I wasn't a fan of his at first. Like, you know, first couple episodes of Power, I was like, I don't know. But, I mean, he really, really drew me in. And it's not even like he's one of my favorite, you know, wrestlers in NWA. Like, you know, if I were to rank them, he'd probably be like, you know, 7, 8, somewhere in there. But because of his presentation, because of the way that he goes about his business, he is the one that I would have marked out for in that situation more than anybody in NWA besides Eli Drake. And to me, Eli Drake is just on another level. So that's another story in itself. But I mean, I thought the match was really good. I mean, I once again really enjoyed Eddie Kingston. I think the thumbtack thing really surprised me because I did not think that Cody was going to be the one to take those thumbtacks. I mean, you have one guy who's EVP of the company, star, whatever, whatever. And then you have this other guy basically coming from the Indies. That was the part that surprised me. Nothing else surprised me about that match. And actually, the one thing, one disappointing thing about these situations is the fact that if Cody wrestles somebody who is not from AEW, you pretty much know who's going to win that match. Because it's very, very unlikely that they are going to have somebody come from outside the promotion and win that sort of match. That was the only thing that disappointed me when Ricky Starks came in and had that match against Cody. And by the way, I did mark out for Ricky Starks too. I'm probably going to mark out for all the NWA alumni at this point. But yeah, that's the one thing is, you know, some of the suspense is taken away. And so it kind of detracts from it. But still, when you have a guy like Cody and you have a guy like Eddie, you're still going to have a good product. And that's what I think that match was.
Yeah, they had a hell of a match, and I agree. Like, as soon as Eddie Kingston came out, I went crazy too. And I do watch NWA Power not as much now as I did when it first started, but I definitely agree that Eddie wasn't like one of the top guys there, like in ring, but from a character standpoint, he's probably one of the best that they have because like his emotion and his promos is like you said, it's just real. Like, you don't feel like he's playing a character. You feel like he's really telling you his life story. And that will get you, like, wrapped in it as a fan. So, and I also agree, like, Cody taking the thumbtack spot, I was shocked by that one, too, because with Eddie having a shirt on, you know, usually 9 times out of 10, when somebody pulls out tacks, the guy that's got the clothes on is the one taking the bump. So when Cody took it, that was definitely a wow moment. So, but, yeah, that was probably one of the coolest ways to start off Power. Like, they've got a good thing going right now where like they bring in the indie guys, and yeah, obviously you know they're gonna lose, but it's cool to see them getting that type of exposure.
Yeah, I mean, it provides a showcase for them, and I mean, who knows, like, I would really love to see, I don't know how possible it is with contracts and all that, but I would really love to see like some sort of working relationship between NWA and AEW, at least through the pandemic, since NWA is not running shows. They're not even doing their other YouTube productions now because of the whole Lagana situation. So, I mean, these guys and girls are sitting there with nothing to do. So I think right. It would be great if we could see, you know, a James Storm, an Eli Drake, maybe even a Nick Aldis, or especially when you talk about the women's side.
Oh, yeah.
You don't think AEW's women's division could use an appearance by, you know, Allison Kay, Thunder Rosa, or Mardell? You know, like.
Then it was said really all the names, and you didn't say Melina.
Oh, yeah.
See, the reason I didn't say Melina is because Melina really hasn't been on there that much, like, towards the end. It seemed like once she got her shot and she lost that match, like, she really wasn't on there anymore, not even running the angle that she was running with Thunder Rosa and Marty Bell. So, I mean, I don't know if Melina is still involved in the business. So that's why I didn't mention Melina. But you want to throw her in there too? Hey, go ahead.
The business needs her. Or we at least the business needs that ass. Okay, I will say before we move on to the next thing, I will say I disagree with the thumbtacks based off one thing. Cody Rhodes gives zero fucks.
That is true.
Yeah. Got a point there.
He gives zero fucks. So, you know, I didn't know who was going to take it, but I wasn't surprised to see that flat back and Cody end up on it. I was like, yep, that makes sense. Because he ain't got no sense. and speaking of sense, what do you guys think about the emerging Team Taz? So you got Brian Cage, Taz, and it looks like your man Starks is going to be joining that faction. Good, bad, indifferent? How we feel about Team Taz?
What's the point of bringing the FTW title back?
I have no answer for that.
Yeah, I got no answer for you on that one.
I'm guessing it's just good heat on Cage, maybe? That's the only thing make him seem more imposing. But you know what? Speaking of women and everything, you want to make Brian Cage interesting? Bring his wife.
See?
Oh, yeah.
So we can have a Mark Mero in NXT, and we can have a Mark Mero in AEW. I see what you're trying to do. So you're trying to see who can be Mark Mero the best.
I mean, at least Cage was a champion in Impact, though. I mean, Miro never got that far. Karrion Kross never got that far. So, I mean, Cage has something.
I feel you, bro. I only care about their women.
There you go. But I like the pairing of Starks and Cage because it gets Starks on TV because, you know, he had that match with Cody and then he was pretty much demoted to the YouTube show, the Dynamite. So if it gets him on TV, then that's a good thing. So, but he really doesn't need a promo guy for him because he can cut a promo himself. If you see him in the NBA, NWA, he probably one of the best guys they had down there besides like him and Eddie Kingston. Literally, they're probably the best promo guys they had along with Eli and Oliver. So.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's going to be like the, you know, that cartoon, the Looney Tunes cartoon with the little dog and the big dog.
I don't want things. Starks about killed Darby Allin with that hit from behind, man.
And look.
Hope Darby all right. I think Darby and Starks, that could be a really good feud, too. Like a little.
Yes.
A little dope feud right there.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. But actually, I think we're supposed to get a little bit of that next week because I think there's supposed to be Starks and Cage against Moxley and Darby. Assuming Darby recovers.
Yeah, tornado match. So, yeah, that should be a good one. AEW's got some good stuff going on. I give them credit.
They do. They really do.
Sean, you muted.
Unmute your mic, Sean. Sean, unmute your mic.
Thank you. I don't like the presentation of John Moxley right now.
You say you do, you don't?
Don't. I think he's bland as a champion.
He's not as main event as Jericho was. I'll agree with that. He just seems like a hardcore guy that just all his matches are just hardcore.
And like what happened to him wanting to be heel and now he's the babyface. I don't see him as the company babyface. It just
there's no
role like the role for him.
Yes, there's kind of like, I guess, for when I did the episodes I did watch, like Jericho as a champion was entertaining. And the few times I've seen Mox as the AEW champ. I haven't really been. I guess that's one reason why I'm just like, make me watch. Give me a reason to enjoy your champion. And I'm not having a reason to enjoy the champion. And probably I shouldn't take that out on the whole promotion, as the Mets look like trash as always, but that's another story for another day. And as I look at I shouldn't take it out on the promotion as a whole, but, you know, if your top guys are, you know, going to be, what's the word, presentable, I guess, like, give me something to enjoy. Like, at least with Jericho, I had a reason to enjoy it, not just because it's Jericho, but Jericho's always evolving. And when Jericho's always evolving, like AEW Jericho different from all the versions of Jericho in the past. So as long as he's, you know, give me something to enjoy, like an evolving character as a champion.
And that's just the greatest of Jericho. He just knows how to, like, keep changing with the time. Like, Mox has kind of went back to that where he's just like, I'm this hardcore guy from back in the day. And, you know, we've seen that already. Like, give us something, like, different. Because that's what you were talking about you were going to do when you left WWE. But all you did was just go back to this old character from, like, 2002 where everything was hardcore. And, you know, nobody kind of really wants to see that anymore. Like, the good thing with Jericho was not only was he entertaining, but you really wanted to see somebody, you know, beat him. You know, you don't really get that with Mox. It's like you kind of want to see somebody beat him, but not what you want from your face champion. You know, you want him to beat all the odds and everything like that. But you just kind of like, all right, Mox is on. All right, well, I'm going to see what's going on with NXT.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Mox is on. Yeah, whatever. It's not must see. It doesn't bring you in. When Jericho was the champion, now that Jericho is not the champion, anytime Judas hits, I want to see Jericho. I want to see what he's going to do, what he's going to say. The most entertaining thing on AEW since they started has been Chris Jericho. And, like, Mox hasn't been in. Like, Mox had that, you know, draw in that appeal moment when he first came in. But ever since that feud with Jericho and him winning the belt, you know, and I don't even think that's COVID related. I just purely think that's character driven. And maybe it was too soon for him to elevate to that number one spot, because it ain't it. All right, Benny, got a comment and we'll move
on. Yeah, just real quick. I think the thing with Moxley is that it seems like a placeholder reign, and he honestly feels like a placeholder, like y'all are saying. Like, there's no real draw to him. And I kind of think he's a placeholder because if you look at AEW's roster, they really don't have a lot of great faces right now. They just don't. Like, if you try to think of a great singles face in AEW, it's going to take you a minute.
Agree.
And so I think he's the placeholder to get the belt on. And I think the reason that they chose him as this place was because of his WWE pedigree, because people have heard of him. So they couldn't give it to, you know, some other AEW face because they haven't built anybody else up yet. So, you know, we'll go with the recognizable guy, probably the same reason that they went with Jericho as the initial champion. And so, okay, we have these recognizable guys while we build these other guys up. Now, sooner or later, you know, sometime this fall, and I don't think this is an outlandish prediction, but Mox is going to end up losing that belt to MJF. When MJF gets that belt, things are going to change. And I honestly think that MJF is the most entertaining person that they have had in AEW thus far. That's Jericho's cool. I learned the lyrics to the song, but dang it, MJF hits every week. Every week that he's on. And honestly, it is criminal that he has, especially during the pandemic. This is a time that they really should have put him front and center. But if they're going to do a slow burn, and he started talking about Moxley in promos, you know, so yeah, I think it's coming, and they're probably hoping that, you know, fans will be back in the arenas for this big MJF Moxley push to get that match, to put that strap on MJF. Because honestly, that's what they need. They need to push that man to the moon. Because he, I mean, he's, his in-ring is, you know, I'd say, you know, great above average. But on the mic, man, it's hard to find anybody better. It really, really is. And that's honestly what they need to pull people in, especially on Wednesdays when you are dealing with a product on the other side that has at least comparable wrestling, if not outright better. So you got to beat them with the extra stuff, and MJF provides that extra.
All right, guys, let's switch gears to Friday Night SmackDown. And of note, I want to start off by talking about the Glow. Let's talk about Naomi. A couple weeks ago, they had her doing karaoke. I mean, she wasn't the only one doing karaoke, but she was the one that everybody got fired up about during karaoke. In the following week, she lost in what looked like a squash match versus Lacey Evans. And then
travesty.
We had, what was the hashtag? Naomi deserves better. So let's talk about Naomi for a little bit. I believe that Naomi does deserve better. But fellas, the question I want to, and I'm pretty sure you all do too, but the question I want to rise to you all is, Naomi deserves better, but how much more does she deserve? What level is Naomi truly at?
I just think, because, like, people can't act like Naomi and then get no runs. Now, she didn't get, like, strong runs, but, I mean, she's won, like, a two-time champ, and she won the first women's Battle Royal at WrestleMania.
She won the title at WrestleMania, too, didn't she?
Yeah, in the hometown. So, it's like, she got some shine over the years. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like she just been screwed the whole time and never won the belt and never had no time to shine. You know what I'm saying? She's had some time to shine. But she is better than squash matches, though. But at this point, you know, I feel like she should be in, like, she should be in a title hunt. I just don't know if she should win the title. She should be having maybe, like, 10, 15, 20-minute matches with somebody good to make them look good. Somebody like a Bayley or a Sasha or Charlotte. Somebody like that, you know what I'm saying? But as for an extended run, I mean, she's had, like I said, she got the Mania moment. You get, you know, there's not too many girls that win the belt at Mania in their hometown. You know what I'm saying? So was the lip syncing stuff stupid? Obviously. But yeah, she just needs to be, you know, she's a talent, just use her better. You know what I'm saying? You don't see Natalya doing lip sync matches, but see on Raw. But she on Raw almost every week, you know, putting on competitive matches, but she lose. And, you know, but that's what I think with Naomi is, you know, I think she's a vet that should be in the ring, you know, showing off her talents, you know, not doing squash matches or lip syncing. So I get where people are talking about that, but I don't think she needs to be like a champ getting a big run or anything like that right now.
Yeah, I was actually there when Naomi won that championship at WrestleMania in her hometown. And I mean, for people to say that she doesn't get a reaction, I can tell you firsthand that that's false. But I think when talking about Naomi and talking about almost any woman in WWE, you know, you kind of have to acknowledge that there is this glass ceiling that five women are above. And I mean, everybody else is pretty much out of luck. And I don't think it's rocket science as to who those five women are. Now, take those five out of the equation. Whether you say they deserve to be there or not, that's a different discussion. But take them out of the equation, and I'm not sure that there are too many people that are that much better than Naomi. But of course, you only have two belts. Well, three if you include NXT. So, I mean, there's not, excuse me, it's like DJ Nice was saying, there's not really a lot of room for, you know, better, however you may describe that, for Naomi, you know, or for even somebody like Asuka. Like, there's only so far that they're going to be able to go with WWE's women's divisions being structured as they are.
And I think I want to hit on what you just said, like, and we all can name the five. That's easy as hell. But that's kind of comparable to how things have been on the men's side forever. You know what I mean? There's always those tiers. You know what I mean? We think about the Attitude Era. You know, we always talk about the Attitude Era. Okay. That top tier, you know, Stone Cold, Rock, Undertaker, Triple H, Foley when he was around. You know what I mean? Like, those are your guys. And unless, and it took Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, all those types, it took them a long time to get past that. You know what I mean? And even some folks like Brock Lesnar came in and jumped them. You know, I think Brock won his title in like 04. Eddie didn't get it until 2 years later. You know what I mean? So,
no, Eddie and Benoit won it at 04 WrestleMania.
In 04. My bad. You're right.
Brock got his at SummerSlam in 2002.
2002. You're right. But yeah, that's still before. Just had the years wrong. But the point is that it's, I feel like it's okay for Naomi, like Nice said, to be in that space where she's that vet that, you know, has good matches, helps people get better. I think that's a great position for a talent to be. I think she's very talented. She deserves better than doing karaoke and, you know, Lord forbid they bring back bra and panties and all that other type of bullshit. So she definitely shouldn't be doing nothing like that. But like Benny said, I believe Naomi gets a reaction. I don't believe that Naomi is a draw. You know, I don't think that. I think you put marquee talent together on a WrestleMania or a big event poster if Naomi is on it. Like, I don't feel like that's going to draw people in. You know what I'm saying? But if you put Charlotte and Becky on there, Charlotte and Sasha, Bayley and Sasha, even Asuka at this point, because Asuka is really risen, and I guess that's because Vince finally likes her. I just don't think – I don't see Naomi being past that top-of-the-line second-tier player. You know what I mean? I hate to sound like the authority and call her a B-plus player.
B-plus.
But, like, I kind of feel like she a B-plus player.
Let me throw this question out there. How much, if we're going to say that Naomi's been held down, how much, if any of this, can we attribute to the legal issues that her husband has had over the years?
I feel like she's lost some momentum because of that.
Hey, I don't know. Because, like, it seemed like every time the Usos get, like, a DUI, then they win the belt. So, I don't know if that really messed with them that much, because like the last two times they got busted, the following pay-per-view, they won the championship. So I don't know.
But they were out for a while, and she was out while they were out.
Yeah, I think they took her off, but that might have been like personal reasons. She might have been like need wanting a break as well. So that maybe that's why she left. You know, we don't really know if they took her off TV because of them or if she requested to be off with them. So, you know, she could have some family time.
She did say she was going through some family stuff, like, while that was going on. It wasn't at the beginning of that, but I think, like, maybe halfway during that break, she did say she was going through some real serious family stuff. I do remember that, like, say, last October, November. I think she mentioned that.
All right, finally, I can jump in. All right, so with that being, with everything being said, I think it's a travesty that you lose a squash match to Lacey Evans, because Lacey has been probably one of the biggest busts I've ever seen coming over from SmackDown to Raw. Go ahead, Sean. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. I see you reacting over there. Go ahead.
Oh, man, you heard that man. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, you can't say, man, Heel Lacey is a great character. That's all I'm going to say.
She is a great character, but she should have a title by now, honestly. Let's just be real. She should have a title by now. And I don't know if it's the powers that be or whatever, but most likely it is. But honestly, like, it's been a disappointment to me. Like, Heel Lacey, and I don't even want to talk about Face Lacey, because that was just a horrible idea to begin with. I think that kind of derailed her momentum. Like, how dare you say a nasty, determined endearment? Like, since when, in certain situations, but nasty is not really a term of endearment, really. But back to Naomi, though, like, I think that whole guilty by association with the whole legal issues with her husband, that may have factored in a little bit, but not all the way. But it's really, I really think, though, that she doesn't deserve squash matches. Like, if you're going to be, I mean, if you're a vet now, you could be a talent enhancer. And I think, like y'all touched on it with Natalya, like, she's going to lose, but she's going to make, you know, that she's going to enhance the talent, make them better by working them and whatnot. But I think Naomi should get that same treatment. I kind of agree with the fact that she, you know, she's charismatic, she's athletic, she can wrestle her ass off. Like, that's never been in question at all. But she draws to a certain audience, us, but is it enough to cross over? And that's where the problem lies. Like, I don't think there's not enough crossover appeal and not enough people that will get behind her like they would like a Sasha or something of that sort. And that's where, you know, I would even say she's a B-plus player, maybe an A-minus, but which is the same realm.
I'm about to say that's the same thing.
It's the same realm. But we turned that B-plus player into a legend like Daniel Bryan. Like, if there's enough voices to get behind that quote-unquote B-plus player, then it's different. I mean, look at Kofi. Kofi, let's phrase it, everybody got behind that because of what he did over the years and what he's – all the things that he's done. I think there's just not enough momentum for Naomi right now to get that same treatment. That's where I'm going with it.
And I just want to touch on that, like you said, and there's where the difference lies. Like, somebody like Kofi, like, everybody was behind Kofi, not just the blacks. You know what I mean? Daniel Bryan, I mean, the gimmick, or, you know, the storyline was that he was a B-plus player. We all know that wasn't true. Everybody was behind Daniel Bryan. And just based off the reaction that you see on social media and the news sites and all this other stuff, the only people that really rise up for Naomi are mostly, I won't say only, but mostly, you know, black people. You know what I mean? And, you know, ain't nothing wrong with that, but that's not going to be enough, like you said, to get her over that hump to be able to appeal to a broader audience. Like, something's not – maybe she need to get rid of that glow shit and stop coming out with damn disco balls on her head dancing and shit. Like, everybody – I mean, white people can't even dance, so I can see why it's not appealing to them.
Right.
Exactly.
I think the big thing is, just like I said, you know, she won the strap already. She won, so it's like, you know, with Kofi, he had never won the big one, so that's why everybody can get behind him. But Naomi's like a former like two-time champion, three-time champion, something like that. So, you know, well, they'll get behind her, but just not like Kofi that magnitude.
Before we move on, guys, just want to touch on it for a few minutes and just ask you, brothers, how you feeling about Big E getting this singles run?
It was a matter of time. I love the pop right there. It was a matter of time. I think this is probably the best time to do it. I mean, Woods is out, whether it's legit or storyline, Kofi's out. So this is like the time. Like, why not get that push? You know, he's been in the background for far, far too long. And I think, you know, it's been 10 years removed since he's won the NXT title. Let's put that in perspective. Like, and that's really kind of like a long time, man. You know, it would have been nice had we seen him kind of like go after Ziggler after Ziggler won the World Heavyweight title when we were at WrestleMania, Sean, when that happened. Well, the night after WrestleMania, the best Raw ever, by the way. But I think the fact that we haven't got to see him do the great things he's capable of doing in the tag team world. We haven't seen that in such a long time. It's going to be refreshing. And I think this is one of those things where, you know, I saw a report, you know, the other day where Vince is looking to, you know, get new blood, like push new stars. And this would be like the perfect timing. I mean, New Day's won 8 tag team titles. Like, they're legendary. Longest tag team reign. And they've been together for so long, and they haven't broken up. And, you know, we thought at one point something would happen, but it never did. And I think they can still work with that. But, you know, let Big E do his thing. It's time.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely time for Big E. And I'm glad it didn't break up New Day, because that's what, you know, everybody thought he was going to turn heel. Him and Kofi's going to feud. But, you know, nobody want to see that, man. We want to see them, like, stay together. I mean, they draw so much money as a team. So it is good to see them that, you know, I just hope they just do it right, you know, because they could give them shots to keep burying them. You know, that's typical WWE. So I'm not going to get too excited about it, especially since, you know, the main event scene is Braun Strowman and The Fiend, so ain't no telling what they're going to do there. But I definitely would like to see, like you said, if they're going to create new stars, this is a good time to do it. And, you know, I think a lot of people will get behind Big E, almost pretty much similar as Kofi. Maybe not as much, just because Kofi was there longer, but I could definitely see it happening.
Yeah, I'm more of a wait-and-see guy on this, too, with Big E. I think the ceiling for this, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think the ceiling for this is probably going to be an intercontinental title feud with AJ, which I think would be really, really good. I think they could do good work together, have good matches. But, yeah, like their story, their being WWE, their story or history, with Black Folk, yeah, I'm not going to be holding my breath on that one. So, yeah, I mean, wait and see, you know, be hopeful, you know. But, we'll see. I'll just leave it there.
That's what I'm saying, because, like, I was standing there, too,
that, you know, they'll probably put him in the mid card against AJ, but the problem is he's already been in the kind of champion. So, you know what I'm saying? He's already had that mid card run back, you know, when he first started with Ziggler. So it's like, we don't need to go, you know, if you're going to give the man a push, give him the push. You know, that's how I feel. But, you know, again, like we said,
goddamn push.
Exactly. But, you know, they've got a history with it. So we'll just have to wait and see. But if they do it, it's Big E season. Big meat, big meaty man slap meat.
But I also think that, yeah, and, you know, when it comes to WWE and the black talent, aside from R-Truth, I think R-Truth got something on Vince McMahon because he's always, like, in his good graces or whatever. But
always.
I'm sorry. I really, we all know that Vince McMahon just loves nigger humor.
That sounds about right.
Basically, but I think seeing, you know, because we always have to have that hope when it comes to our black superstars, basically, because we know how Vince does them. I mean, I still remember that night Kofi was about to go in the Elimination Chamber and Edge just came out of nowhere and just took him out, and I still ain't forgave Vince for that shit, man. Cause even when Kofi won the title, I still forgot about that. But I was really expecting Kofi's title run to be like a day or even a month. I didn't think it was going to last as long as it did, and I'm glad that it lasted as long as it did. I hate the way it ended, and
everyone did.
Yeah. And so it was kind of just like, you know, it kind of gave me a little bit of hope for Big E there, but it's one of those things where, like Benny said, we got to wait and see.
I think the one thing that we can look at right now is that, you know, there is this wave of representation in WWE right now. I know everybody's on the big wave of not giving Naomi a chance, but Naomi deserves better. Okay, cool. Big E's about to get this push. Cool. But you turn on Raw and, you know, because of MVP, you got black faces shining week in and week out. MVP has Lashley, Shelton Benjamin with him, and across from the ring before COVID-19 got in his body. Why do you just want to say that Apollo got COVID? That shit pissed me off, but that's for another day. Apollo, Ricochet, Cedric Alexander, and, you know, I'll even invite Ali to the cookout, you know? So we do have representation. Most of the champions in WWE currently are of people of color. So, yeah, there's not that complete 100% trust that they're going to push Big E to the stratosphere and, you know, pass that IC title mark and maybe potentially, you know, get up to world title status. But, you know, the landscape right now, I feel like we got as better chance now than we have in the past. You know, I think Big E has a better opportunity to get there without fans pushing for it than it had to happen for Kofi. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the talent that is out there, and I'm glad you mentioned when you were going down the rundown with the MVP and how, you know, there's guys that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, Ricochet went from a world title shot to the
main event.
Main event.
Yeah, E-list, as I was. Yeah, not even the D-list, the E-list, which is main event. I think the same with Cedric Alexander. I mean, he went from the D show 205 Live to F. Like, fuck you. And so getting them back on the television scene, back on the shows, the main shows has been a great thing. And I think that, and it also got to kind of attribute this to the fact that Triple H out in NXT, I mean, has given these guys chances, more chances down there. And then it's kind of like being able to see, finally see what they can do in the main event title picture. And yeah, because before, I mean, we only had what, The Rock and Mark Henry and
Booker T. You know,
Booker T.
Back in the day. But then, you know, comparing that to now, there's way more people of color in WWE than there were in the past.
That too. That too. It's just, it's refreshing, you know, but we all, I mean, because Vince McMahon is still, at the end of the day, the ultimate troll, we still have to be wary of how the treatment of these talents get. I mean, I thought Kofi's championship reign could have ended better. I think everybody agrees with me there. And I think that with the run that even all of our the talent has been getting right now, I'm hoping Keith Lee has a long run as the NXT champion. And yes. I definitely hopeful for that. I hope that we get to see more people of color get these titles and do great things as well.
All right, guys, we're going to shift gears. We're going to leave the present alone. We're going to turn back the clock a little bit. Got two moments for you. July 28th is a great day. It is the day that the Lord gave you all me.
Oh, God. I knew where he was going with this.
I was wondering where he was going considering today's the 26th.
As soon as he said July 28th, I was like, oh, Lord.
You know, but, you know, I can't just talk about me when it comes to July 28th. In the world of professional wrestling, on July 28th, the Lord also gave us a great moment on WCW Monday Nitro, July 28th, 1997. And I know, Mr. Dwayne Dunham, you're going to love this moment. I can't wait to hear yours and everybody's feedback. Oh, moment of note from July 28th, 1997 on Monday Nitro. Alex Wright defeated Chris Jericho to win the Cruiserweight Championship.
Oh, man. Not Das Wonder Kid.
That was your fucking dig, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He caught it beginning of the show, too.
Yes. Come on. Oh, come on. If Eric Bischoff ain't never did anything for me, he gave me a champion on my birthday, my 11th birthday. I think it was my 11th. Damn it, I don't know how old I am. I think
I really. Jesus on his hand right now. He can't say nothing.
It don't matter. It was my birthday, and Alex Wright won a title. That's what I'm talking about.
That had to be one of the first Nitros I watched once I got back into wrestling, because I got back into wrestling.
You might cut off, Benny.
Okay, let me try that again. That was one of the first Nitros that I watched once I got back into wrestling, because I got back into wrestling summer of 97 while I was out on internship in Houston. So, yeah, that had to be one of the first ones. But if we're going to talk about birthdays and we're going to talk about championship wins, let's go up about 11 months to June 29th, 1998.
This is about me, though. But go ahead.
All right, now it ain't.
Go ahead.
To regain the WWF Championship on that episode of Monday Night Raw. Thank you very much.
I don't care. Because Alex Wright should have been a world champion, damn it.
Oh, thank God that he was. Thank God that he was. I did not have to watch that Dancing Fool dance all over TV with a damn world title.
I will not stand for Alex Wright slander on this show.
Did he become Berlin?
Yeah, man, that was a dark period. that was a dark period in my career. Had my man coming out here with a black mohawk looking. Fuck Vince Russo for that. He ain't have to do that.
Thank God. I will actually, that's one of the few things I'll thank Vince Russo for.
What? He got rid of the dance.
Stop making that man do this.
Come on, man. Look, that was a heel. That man made you hate him. Only thing he went out there to do was a little jig.
That was the most horrible jig I've ever seen in my life.
Hey, man, it wasn't no different than Norman Smiley, but y'all like Norman Smiley.
I don't like Norman Smiley. He can go to hell too.
Oh shit.
Damn.
Oh hell. We dumping on Norman Smiley, man.
Damn. D don't like the big wins.
I was not a fan of a man slapping another man's ass, and yeah, that was just not
feel like the big
that was just not
I'm with you on Norman Smiley though. Yeah.
Okay, so Dwayne didn't like Norman Smiley. He didn't like Mark Merrill when he was Johnny B. Bad. Like, I know Dwayne didn't like Lenny Lane. But hey, we're getting off focus. I just want to again
take a dig at Dwayne.
That on my birthday, Alex Wright won a championship.
Hey Sean, can we get an Alex Wright dance from you?
No, I ain't gonna do that. You know.
I mean, hey.
That's like people singing Mariah Carey songs. You let her sing it. You listen to it.
Okay.
Let her sing it. You know, I can't do it. I can't do it better than that. But that's okay. Okay, we're gonna move off Alex Wright. I just wanted to point that out. All right, let's talk about 2001. You don't stop putting your middle finger up on that. All right, let's talk about
you knew what you were going with.
Let's talk about Booker T. This week, July 30th, 2001. This is 16 years ago, Raw from Philadelphia. Booker T defeated Kurt Angle in a no DQ match to win back the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. That would be Booker T's fifth and final WCW world title, and he wouldn't hold another world title until he won the World Heavyweight Championship as King Booker.
All hell, King Booker.
What the fuck? What the hell?
Yo, I'll be honest with you. Like, I didn't remember how many times Booker T won the WCW championship in WWE until I just finished running through all the Nitro episodes. So I just finished watching all the Nitros a couple weeks ago and realized that, yo, when Nitro shut the door, he was only a couple times champion. And came over to WWE and lost it a couple times and won it back a couple times. So I bring that up to ask, to talk about Booker T's introduction in WWE a little bit. How did you all feel about that? Introduction, his first feuds. To me, I kind of feel like they kind of tossed him to The Rock.
Yeah, I actually watched his introduction a couple weeks ago. I was actually on YouTube watching like some past WWE moments. Kind of started with Stone Cold and the Zamboni, and I kind of went from there. And that was actually kind of like the when I got back into it was literally breakdown in your house, and then the night after when Austin came riding in the Zamboni. So that's kind of how I started my way back. And one of the videos I did watch was Booker T and The Rock, and yeah, he kind of did get tossed a little bit to The Rock. The Rock hit all his lines on him, like, it doesn't matter what your name is, and all that. It was good banter, though, and it was really good. Like, Shane was there as well, because, you know, Booker T was part of the Alliance, things of that sort. It was also seeing the back and forth between the now world title, because The Rock ended up winning that as well. But I think it was entertaining at the time, you know. And seeing him get introduced like that to a main player was, it could have been better, but it wasn't bad. I'll put it like that.
Yeah, they definitely fed him to Austin and Rock. But I will say it brought up some classic moments, like when the grocery scene with Austin, that was hilarious. I don't know if y'all remember that. But then also when him and Austin was fighting in the bingo hall in the church. So they had some entertaining segments there. But you know, I definitely agree that he kind of just kind of got jobbed out there at first. It took him a while to kind of get going. I think it was about around WrestleMania 19 with all that craziness with Triple H where he kind of started getting going, even though they still jobbed him at WrestleMania 19. But that, I think that's when they started to take him serious then.
He was kind of Daffy Duck to The Rock's Bugs Bunny to me when he first came in.
Definitely.
Like, it just seemed like The Rock was always just like a step smarter, a step better, whatever. He was a good comic foil at first. And then with Austin, and I'm sorry to keep going here with the Looney Tunes references, but he seemed to be Wile E. Coyote to Austin's Roadrunner. He kept trying and trying and trying to get close to him, but he just couldn't catch him. Now, of course, obviously this is by design, but yeah, I mean, he was that perfect guy, and he was willing to take that role, you know. And I think that is a credit to him, and I find it hard to credit Booker T for a lot of reasons nowadays. But I will give him that, you know, that he took this role and he said, if I stick it out, I will have my chance to shine eventually. And he got it with the King Booker stuff and everything that went on down a few years later. You know, as mentioned, he had to go through some even worse things before he got there. But, you know, to his credit, he stuck it out. And I still don't know how he didn't hit Vince McMahon when Vince uttered the N-word in 2000. I think it was.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was crazy as hell. One of the things, my opinion on Booker T and WWE, see, that whole Alliance thing really fucked him up. If you remember initially, the WCW side of that was supposed to play the babyface role. But the problem is, WCW didn't have nobody that people knew. So who the fuck are they going to cheer? Who the fuck these WWE fans going to cheer for? Mark Jindrak? Sean O'Hara? Who the fuck is that? You know what I mean?
Right.
And then,
I still don't know who the hell they are.
And then, like, so you bring them in as baby faces, but then you have your other notable WCW star, DDP. Well, you just made him the Undertaker's wife's stalker. So he's a heel. So, yeah. And, you know, I don't think Booker T had never been a solo heel before. You know, he had been a heel with, that's how Harlem Heat came in the game back in the day as Cole and Kane. I remember them days. They were a heel tag team. Didn't have to talk much. They were just out there beating people's ass. You know what I mean? So for him to come in, he's the champion of WCW. never been a heel before, and then he gets thrown because of his status as champion directly in there with The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Look, Booker T wasn't perfect in the role. He was learning, but the man will always have my props for being able to swim. And he swam and he got through it and he found his footing. So, you know, big ups to him.
His professionalism was A1 because a lot of people, I think a lot of people who got thrown into that would have floundered. And, you know, he flailed. You know, he probably kind of panicked a little bit. You know how you get thrown into the deep end and you don't know how to swim and you're just fretting and flailing your arms and trying to figure it out. And then eventually, because of survival, you know how to end up swimming. That's exactly what happened here. So I think that he definitely did a great job of that. And it definitely doesn't go unnoticed.
Good stuff, guys. All right. We're going to close it off with a little game of rapid fire. I got 25 questions for you guys. I know that seems like a lot, but it ain't going to be a lot because it's rapid fire. Can't give y'all no time to think about it. We're just gonna hit it up, all right? The order will go in. I ask the question. We'll just go nice, Dwayne, Benny, then me. Then we'll roll on to the next question. Sound good?
Sound good.
I want to give this as an opportunity for the WrestleCast fam and other listeners to get to know us as wrestling fans a little bit more. All right? So to jump in with our first question, guys, who is your current favorite male wrestler?
Keith Lee.
Dang it, y'all gonna make me sound like a bad guy. Eli Drake.
Pete Dunne. All-time favorite male wrestler. You have to pick one.
John Cena. Austin.
Sting.
Shawn Michaels. Who's your favorite current female wrestler?
Sasha Banks, Sasha Bay, baby. Dang. Sasha Banks, I gotta go with Sasha too.
Thunder Rosa.
Look, y'all know I'm about to say the queen. Charlotte. All-time favorite female wrestler. Like I said before, you gotta pick one.
Ooh, all time. I'll go Trish Stratus right now.
Gotta go with Lita.
You know what? I'm rep for 954. I'm gonna go with Lita.
All right, we're gonna go 2-1-2. I'm for Trish Stratus as well. All right, here's where we go get a little interesting. What is your favorite title belt of all time?
Ooh, probably the Ric Flair World Championship belt from like the 92 era.
Oh,
it's a good one. I gotta go with the WWF attitude with the circle and the eagle in the middle and the globe.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Winged Eagle.
I'm gonna go old school red Arn Anderson. NWA television title.
Nice.
What's your favorite WWFE moment?
Oh, man. Probably Kofi Kingston winning the belt.
Austin and the Zamboni.
The first time Vince got arrested.
Dwayne knows this is coming. Brock Lesnar beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Oh, my God.
You almost got us killed. Thank you for me.
I almost died that night. Because
we couldn't help y'all because we weren't sitting that close to each other. We'd have just seen a fight in the stands, like, ooh, somebody get beat up.
Yeah, it was almost us.
Yeah, that night was nuts, man.
All right, favorite WCW moment?
Probably Hogan turning heel. As much as I hate to say it, that was a great moment.
True.
I agree with that, but I want to say when the day that WCW ended.
Oh.
Damn. My mom says, damn.
Because y'all know most of y'all know why the moment I hate the most, but we'll go into that later.
For me, it's the time that Sting came up from underneath the ring to Scorpion Deathdrop Eric Bischoff. I think it was like May. It was like middle of May '97.
Mine is when Ric Flair came back and Four Horsemen reunited. I think it was in South Carolina. Arn Anderson brought everybody back. That was probably one of the first times I teared up as a fan.
Oh,
yeah, man.
That was a good moment.
That hit the feels.
That was a great promo by Rick, too.
Yeah, and I think now we've all seen Flair cry like 100 times since then, but I think that was the first time I saw him cry, and that I was like, yeah. Damn, the Nature Boy had to cry. It kind of hit me in the feels. All right. Favorite piece of merchandise, wrestling merchandise that you've ever owned?
Can it be a shirt or does it got to be like a belt or something?
Like anything.
All right. I'll say that John Cena the Carter's joint.
Okay.
I got to say, I had a smoking skull belt. I missed it so much.
CM Punk shirt with honorable mention being some confetti that I still have from DB winning at WrestleMania 30.
Nice.
The Winged Eagle.
Oh, he's show off. The show off.
Right. I will say honorable mention is Sean's world heavyweight title.
Yes,
that I always got because I always got to carry that one. He would carry the Winged Eagle. I'll carry the world heavyweight title.
There you go. All right, your favorite tag team of all time?
Ooh. I'll go Hardy Boys.
Nice.
New Age Outlaws.
Oh, you didn't know.
You better call somebody.
Can-Am Connection.
Okay. Legion of Doom. Wow. Favorite faction?
Oh, that's Nation of Domination all day.
I felt it.
All day.
You know where I'm going with this one, D-Generation X.
Yeah. Favorite faction? Man, that's actually one I got to think about a little bit, but just for the sake of time, we'll go with the Nation.
Mm-hmm. I was born and bred NWA guy. I got to go with the Four Horsemen. Who's the best manager? Who's your favorite manager?
Oh, Bobby the Brain Heenan, by far.
Yep. Yep.
The Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
Okay. Benny, you going to Brain, too?
Yep.
You're going to Brain, too. Dwayne, just to be clear, this is Jimmy Hart with anybody except for Hulk Hogan, right?
I'll even go with Hulk Hogan on this.
Oh, okay. All right. Who is your favorite play-by-play announcer of all time?
I can tell you who it ain't.
Jim Ross.
The nice guy, JR. What about you, Dwayne?
Oh,
JR. You think I want to say Michael Cole? Fuck out of here. But JR.
Benny?
JR.
Mike Al-Almady.
Wait, who did you say?
Mike Attaway?
Oh, you trolling my man. I had to process that real quick.
Like, I didn't even like that dude on American Gladiators.
Exactly.
I had to do a double take on that one. I'm like, he did not just say that. Tell me.
Yeah, I didn't say that. I was like, wait a minute. No, he didn't say that. I had to pull a Booker T. Tell me.
Oh, man. Nah, man. I'm sorry. That's completely false. I just wanted to see y'all reaction. If I
had to pause.
Right.
My real answer is Tony Schiavone.
Oh, God. That's the one I said I could tell who you think.
I know you don't like Tony. All right, your favorite color commentator, excuse me.
Oh, Bobby the Brain.
I'm gonna go with Taz.
Oh,
not bad.
I'm gonna go with Brain.
Okay, so here's a two-parter. All right, so give me your all-time favorite commentary team, and then give me your commentary dream team. Now, we not doing no three-man, four-man booths. We going traditional two-person booth. So, what's your favorite combination? What's your dream combination?
Favorite combination would be Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon. But if I had to do a dream one, it'd definitely be Jim Ross and Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Favorite one? I want to just say Taz because I don't like Michael Cole. So he can go. I would have to say my dream one would be JR and... I'm going to go with the JBL because JBL is funny as fuck.
He was.
Favorite, I would have to say Ross and Lawler. Dream team, I would actually go with Mauro Ranallo and Brain.
That's not a bad one either.
So I'm just going to say ditto because both of my answers are the same as Vinny's. All right, at the height of the Monday Night Wars, to you, which show was most must see? Did you have to see Monday Night Raw, or did you have to see Monday Night Raw? So I'm not talking about 98-99. I'm talking about 96-97.
Oh, you're talking about like the peak of the NWO?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely WCW.
Peak of the NWO would probably, unfortunately, I have to say Nitro in this case, but I didn't watch either one at the time, so there's that.
Well, Sting beating the mess out of everybody got me back into watching wrestling, so obviously I'm going to say Nitro here.
All right, straight plus on Monday Nitro. All right, this is an interesting question, and I'm going to love your feedback on it. In your opinion, who is an all-time great that doesn't get his or her justice?
All-time great. I'd probably say Rick Rude.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Y'all are gonna think I'm crazy for this, but I'm gonna say Asuka.
Okay. When I make my list of all time favorite wrestlers, especially if you give me top 10, always include one brother. He's not a brother, but you know what I mean. I think he's criminally underrated. Bobby Eaton.
I listen to a guy twice a week who would definitely agree with you.
right.
All right, growing up, what was your favorite promotion? So this is anything.
Oh, I was a huge WWF guy.
WWF?
Yeah, WWF.
All right, I guess I'll be the lone NWA person. All right, we're in our theme song category. So tell me, what's your favorite solo theme song?
I mean, the man rapped his own theme song. So, you know, John Cena time is now, baby.
I love the time is now, honestly. That's actually one of my hidden favorites. But when that break of the glass happens, I go into a whole nother zone. So Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Same wrestler, different theme. I will go with Stone Cold's Alliance theme. The instrumental.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Rock House, y'all. Don't nothing make me feel like a cocky asshole more than NWO music. Your favorite tag team entrance theme.
Favorite tag team. You know, I'm going to go with my boys. New Day.
I said the Outlaws was my favorite tag team, so it's pretty damn obvious I'm going to go with the Outlaws theme song.
Yeah. Can't go wrong there.
Yeah, I'm going with New Day, especially if Big E's intros count.
Yeah. You want it to count? It counts. Mine's going to be Harlem Heat.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm sorry, guys. Let me rewind for a minute. I actually gave you my answer for this question as my solo. My solo thing is Triple H is My Time. My faction theme is NWO. What is your favorite faction theme?
Faction theme?
Yes.
Faction theme? Oh, I'd probably go NWO Wolfpack.
Yeah.
Cause of Mass Destruction. I like it. But I'm going with DX Break It Down.
Let me ask y'all a question about that NWO Wolfpack for a minute. So I have this playlist that's a No Limit Records playlist.
Not I told you.
I got all the P hits and everybody, man, got the Mia X, all that stuff on there. But there's two songs that I have on that playlist that caught one of my coworkers off guard. One
being MVP.
MVP. Yeah. And the other one being the Wolfpack. And they questioned me and they were like, why do you have a wrestling theme on there? And I was like, one, because MVP's theme is the best song that Silk the Shocker ever did. But nobody listens to It Ain't My Fault for him. You listen to it for Mystical. And two, the Wolfpack theme is the best song that C. Murder ever did. So hell, they No Limit. So I put that shit on there.
Well, that depends. That's all C. Murder ever did. It depends on who you attribute that to.
That down for my niggas is still.
Yeah,
I gotta put that Wolfpack number two.
That's a good point, Benny. But too bad that fool got locked up and ended up on Snoop's. So I gotta give him the Wolfpack. All right, let's get back into it. Best heel turn.
I got it. There's one that I want to say, but I just got to go with Hogan just because I ain't seen people throw trash into the ring. Like, somebody else is going to say what I know the other one really is, but I got to go Hogan Bash the Beach.
Shawn Michaels kicking the shit out of Marty Jannetty in the barbershop.
I'm gonna have to go with Hogan. Because, I mean, it just set off so much.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I got to go with Hogan, too.
That's a great one. That was actually one of the probably like the one of the times I could count on my hand I actually liked Hulk Hogan when he did that.
When he turned bad.
Yeah.
All right. What's the best storyline swerve?
Ooh. Damn, that's a good one. Storyline swerve.
Oh, I got mine.
Go ahead, do yours, D. I got to think on this one. That's a good one. That's a good question.
So, I got just like right when I got back into wrestling, Undertaker came breaking Vince McMahon's ankle.
That was a good one. Vince McMahon was
as soon as Vince McMahon turned those middle fingers, Undertaker came, looked at him like, oh, word? Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I got a good one. When Rock turned to the corporation.
Yeah. That was good.
Because he was like the biggest. He had all that momentum. And then out of nowhere, he turned. So that'll be mine.
I like that.
It's being the greater power.
It was me all along.
It was me, Austin. It was me. Oh, man. Come on. That was supposed to be Christopher Daniels.
Vince said he was too small.
Yeah. So all of those were great, but to me, number one is Mark Henry.
I was thinking that. That retirement swerve.
Yeah. That's it.
I was like, I got a lot left in the tank. I was like, bruh, yo, put him in the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah, that was a damn good one.
That was.
That was the biggest G moment. You could let, yo, love it. You talk about a YouTube movie, I mean, a YouTube video that I watch on a regular basis, is that.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
All right, so. Who's your favorite wrestler on the mic of all time?
I'll probably go Rock.
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 Unanimous.
Right.
Okay, since we all say Rock, let's go number two. Who would be your number two? Mine would be Jerry.
Number two. You know what? I'll probably go Jericho too. I'll probably go hit Jericho.
I'm say Jericho. We might have to do a number three.
No, we won't, because I'm going with CM Punk.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Aside from the pipe bomb, I really didn't think much of Punk's mic skills aside from the pipe bomb.
I thought his post pipe bomb stuff was better.
Yeah.
Like when he started talking about Kevin Nash, especially.
Oh, man, them Kevin Nash days.
My little sister Celine sent me a text. Kevin Nash, OMG, thought he was dead.
All right. So if you had one job in professional wrestling, what would it be?
One job?
Producer.
I'll probably, producer, definitely.
Yeah, producer.
Yeah, man, give me the book, because I'm going to book this shit.
Right.
Give me the book. All right, last question. And you got to pick one.
Damn it. What's
your favorite match?
I'd probably say... It's an underrated one that nobody talks about, obviously, but I would say Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit at the Royal Rumble.
I know exactly what match you're talking about.
Yeah.
Wow. My initial response is going to be Hell in Cell 98, but I'm going to go with Sasha and Bayley at TakeOver because that was a classic.
Okay.
So I'm going to go a little bit off the beaten path here. Sting and Luger versus the Steiners from Super Brawl 1.
Woo! Ooh, I looked at that match a couple months ago. Yes. It's good stuff. That's good stuff. There is a Arn Anderson versus Stunning Steve Austin from back in the 2 out of 3 falls era of WCW Saturday Night. That's always stuck out to me. But then Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25 fucked that up. So, gotta go with HBK and Taker.
Yeah, they had a great match.
That was a classic.
All right, fellas. Well, that's about it. Appreciate you and entertaining me with these questions. Had fun. Learned a lot. Got some similar things going on, some differences as well. Maybe we'll do this again. But I appreciate everybody coming up on our first episode of The Push. Back during Real Big. And we'll get together with y'all next week. Tell everybody where they can follow you.
Yo, you can follow me on all platforms, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok, the gram, the book, DJ Nice One. Boy up.
All right, so the Libra Icon on all platforms, Facebook, Dwayne Dunham. I'm pretty much got my phones all on me at all times, so.
What? We ain't got the most cell phones ever.
I only got 2. Shut up.
Neighborhood kingpin.
Hey, man. Can't be telling my business.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
But Libra Icon all platforms. Hit me up. I'm always available for any kind of discussion.
Well, can't say I'm on all platforms, but I will say I am Oligo Las Voces on Twitter. You'll see me in the WrestleCast, you know, talking about wrestling the same way I'm doing here. So, you know, shouldn't be that hard to find, even if it is that hard to spell.
And this is your boy, Sean. You can find me on Twitter at Shaolin Shogun MA. Don't forget the MA, because your bruh worked hard for that master's degree. It's disrespectful when you don't use it. All right. This is The Push signing off. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.